Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the February 6, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would ask folks with electronic devices to please put them on vibrator or otherwise silence them. Remind you that the exits, in case of an emergency, are in the back corner that way, in the front corner this way. Would folks please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We don't have any proclamations tonight, but I wondered if we might take a moment to think about a member of the county legislature who passed away on January 31st. That was George Totman, and he served for 12 years. And I would ask that we have a moment of silence for George. Thank you. We'll hear more on privilege of the floor. We'll go next to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for members of the public to speak to us about any topic for up to 3 minutes. The clerk, Kathy Covert, next to me on my left, will keep time and signal when a minute is remaining. So we'll go to the blue cards first, people who have submitted those, and then if there's anyone who wants to speak after the people who have signed up, they'll be permitted to do so as well. I have Chuck Roberts. Mr. Roberts? I'm sorry?
Can I go later?
Sure. I have Yvonne Dawson Roberts.
Actually, I'd like my son to go and read a letter that we received from DSS.
Dewey? Dewey Dawson.
Hi, I'm Dewey Dawson, and I was asked to read this letter to you guys.
Could you let us know what municipality you're from?
Oh, I'm from Groton, New York.
Thank you.
Okay, so my mom received this letter from the Director of Services, Todd Husick, from the Department of Social Services. It's in regards to her inquiring why she's not allowed to see my nieces and nephews in visitation. So I would just like to read this. It says, Mrs. Dawson, I am writing you at your request to clarify for you why the department does not support visitation with your grandchildren at this time. And there's three paragraphs. There are concerns based on your prior and recent involvement with Child Protective Services, including a recent history of homelessness and residing in or frequently the same home as your grandchildren when they were found to be neglected. In the past, you were asked to sign releases to allow the department to obtain information regarding mental health treatment and hospitalizations. You refused to sign a release provided by your providers to the department. You have let it be known that you do not agree with our position regarding the safety and best interest of your grandchildren. You have maintained an extremely adverse role relationship with the department, including a recent arrest that occurred here in our lobby. This visitation would need to be supervised, but due to your arrest, we are unable to provide you with access to visitation rooms. I am also writing to let you know that your grandchildren's gifts were delivered. Now, my mom, all she wants to do is be able to see her grandkids, you know, and personally, I am one of the few family members who is still able to see these children in their visit in their foster home, and they do come over to my house. I live with my father, and we celebrate Christmas and stuff, so I get to see them personally, but the other family members I have here with me do not get to see them. And I just feel that it's due partly because the Department of Social Services aren't willing to work with my mother. And I just think that's unjust. I know that if they really wanted to help us make our family unit an actual unit again, they could help us. They could communicate. But it seems like all they want to do is give us the runaround. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dawson. Yvonne, did you want to speak now?
Yeah, though.
Yvonne Dawson Roberts.
Here's a picture of me with the three I'm from Groton. Here's a picture of the three grandchildren and I at a supervised visitation at the Department of Social Services before they stopped my visitations. They stopped my visitations when I filed for custody of the three children. There's no reason for these children to be in foster care. Chuck and I can take these three children. We can support these three children, and we can take care of these three children. We live in a house where these three children can live with us for as long as they need to live with us. If there comes a point in time where parental rights need to be terminated, we are willing to adopt these three children. Social Services does not need to have these kids in foster care. There's no reason why we shouldn't see these three children. Social Services has refused to work with me since day one. I was told to file for custody in court. They were not going to work with me. I have tried to work with them. They have turned everything around. They have not worked with me. They had me arrested. That's all on a tape recording that Chuck did. Chuck has had access to every county agency within Tompkins County. He has access to your 911 radios. He has access to, like, everything you people own. But we can't have access to my grandchildren, which is ridiculous. To put that kind of trust in this man and then not to trust him to see these three kids is ridiculous. And Social Services, I'm telling you, I got a letter, this letter here. This letter, when you read this letter says nothing. My visitation stopped long before I was arrested. I was there asking why I could not see these kids. That's why I was arrested. I was there signed up for a foster care class that I was there to participate in a public building when I was arrested. I was signed up to take this class, and I was arrested in a public building before this class started because I was told to leave, and I asked why. That's a violation of my civil rights. Do I need to bring out a civil rights case against the county? I don't want to have to do that. We've gotten the lawsuit way before to get things resolved between the county and employees before. I'm not asking to return to work. Why do they need my medical records? I'm asking to have my grandchildren. I already signed releases for my medical records over a year ago for these people. I gave them copies of every medical record I had. They're liars. I have proven it in court. I proved it with the state. I had an indicated report. I got it reversed. The state come in and reversed it. After they removed three children from my home and kept them from me for over a year, the state come in and reversed all that. I found that they lied in court. They exaggerated. They lied about all kinds of stuff. And these people are your employees. And somebody needs to hold them accountable when they're signing legal papers. Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck Roberts?
Yes, I reside at 104 Roosevelt Ave, Groton. I've lived in Tompkins County for the last 40 years. I've taken care of your 911 system through the Motorola contracts, and I've had the key to your courthouse, but I was asked to stay away from DSS building, and they were going to arrest me if I didn't leave. And my wife wanted to make a point, so she stayed and got arrested. Now we have to hire a lawyer. And it's all just for a humanity thing of visiting her grandchildren or getting custody of them, which I don't see why we should be paying court costs and lawyer fees for a simple thing like that. And the foster parents are not cooperating. They refuse to let us give the children Christmas gifts or birthday gifts. They cancel, when we did have privileges to visit them, they cancel out for just simple reasons. And it's all a personal conflict between DSS and my wife, I feel. They just don't get along, they clash personalities. But it's human service they're supposed to be providing that we're not getting. And it don't make a bit of sense. It's not common sense. It's not helping families. It's not helping children. It's not helping your county. It's unreasonable. And I'm appealing to you to correct the situation, if you could.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Thank you.
Crystal Palmer.
Good evening. I'm a little nervous, so I reside in Newfield, New York. My sister's children are the children in the foster care right now. Unfortunately, I have four kids of my own, three that reside with me full time, and my sister's oldest is 6 months older than her, and her youngest is 6 months older than her. So they're very close in age. They grew up together, and my kids have not seen my nieces or nephew in over a year at this point. The reason why I'm here is not only for that, but I had a friend of mine file for temporary custody of my 8-year-old Alana. Judge Sherman signed the paperwork. My daughter was removed from my custody. My other two kids remained with me. It was a week before I was supposed to leave for Texas to be with my husband, who's in the Army. I got stuck in New York. I went on Dr. Phil. I fought as hard as I could fight. Obviously, my daughter's back in my care right now. We went to court. The law guardian said there was no extraordinary circumstances. I had clean CPS report after report. When the order was signed, there was no open investigation. There was no pending CPS case when my daughter was removed from me. And yet, my niece and nephew are placed into a foster care where the foster mother has 9 Facebook pages. It's a couple that have never had children, never able to make a mistake. You know, they're 20 minutes late to a visit. It's okay. The father's 3 minutes late to a visit. His visit's canceled. He can't see his kids. It's an ongoing battle that we're having. I've been forced to be a single mother now because my husband has left us. I work and I pay my bills. I don't get Section 8. And I only have the help of my mother who watches my children. And my mother takes care of them. They're potty trained thanks to the help of my mother. They know their ABCs. My two and three-year-old know their colors. You know, my mom had them for the last 2 days because of the weather, because I couldn't get to them, and I was working overtime to cover other people's shifts. And obviously, my children are well-behaved. They're being quiet, and they're sitting here right now. So she couldn't have done that bad of a job with them. It just really bothers me how the judicial system works, how they can just take kids and place them with non-family members without investigations, how they can tear families apart. And there just needs to be something done about it. And so this is my first step, but I'm going up the ladder, and I will go all the way to Congress if I have to. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. Jamie Hendricks.
Hi. My name is Jamie Hendricks from Trumansburg. I'm here to just give a little update on what the anti-jail expansion coalition is doing. Since last time, we met with Leslyn McBean, Claire Bourne, to find out what we need to do to get a resolution just being explored and voted on by the legislature. So the first step, our understanding is that it goes to the Public Safety Committee. And the last couple of days, I sent out emails to each of you individually just to meet with you to find out this, how you feel, under which conditions you would support such a resolution, and how we can help you move it forward. And this, we already got responses of three legislators, some of them within half an hour. So that was kind of very exciting, and I look forward to get responses from everyone else of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hendricks. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on privilege of the floor? Please state your name and your municipality, please.
Hi. Hi, good evening. Joanne Cipolla Dennis. I'm from Dryden. All of this seems trivial at this moment. I voice my concern about public record. I've asked the chair and those who transcribed to please correct two meetings that I had that were errored, and one that eliminated Officer Morocco's name from my last public safety meeting records. I'm asking why and who instructed this, please. It's fair and reasonable to correct those errors and to resend them, please. I appreciate your support of the two very important projects. First, thank you for MEGA. What an outstanding opportunity it is for the state of New York, but for Tompkins County especially. Thank you for the support that you gave for the Solarize Tompkins SE project. It was an astounding success. I installed a 5-kilowatt system at my house and eliminated natural gas for heat, cooking, and producing in January in the state of New York in the midst of Snowmageddon, 3 times the power that we actually use in one day by 4 o'clock with a 5-kilowatt system that cost me $46 and nothing more. I'll buy that system in 5 years for $2,500, and until that, Solar Liberty, the provider, takes care of every single maintenance issue until I decide to do that. Everybody in Tompkins County should have the same opportunity. Deborah and I gave 300 hours of community service for that project. It was a pleasure. I would do it again. I'm not on the steering committee this year. And I was dismayed to learn that you received a letter from the Ithaca Green Building Alliance, which we no longer belong to. You would ask me about that in private. The Ithaca Green Builder Alliance disbanded 2 days before you actually received that letter. They dissolved completely. They don't have any bylaws. There's no board of directors. There is nothing. I don't make decisions when forced to, like it was made. We were supposed to decide in 24 hours on an RFP that has never even been published. You would want to know the motivating factors behind that letter, please. Thank you for the support. Please listen to the woman who spoke up here. This whole family needs help. We don't do stuff like this here. If your employees are doing something that they shouldn't, to allow this type of pain, then cut it out. I don't want my tax money used to arrest people for seeing their grandchildren, for God's sakes. And I don't think any one of you do either. Please support the 1-year moratorium for the jail expansion. We can reduce those costs substantially. Please listen to me. I was in corrections. We can do things differently. We don't need to spend $600,000 on a roof that will never be used in inclement weather because we don't take prisoners outside in inclement weather. It's a safety risk. We can't hear radios. We can't see properly. It's absurd. Plant some trees. Get them to help you. Cut the cost by $400,000 and redirect the rest of that money, please. We need a year to tell you about this. Please respect the public. We have a lot to tell. We have a lot to offer. Please listen to us, and please correct my records. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cipolla Dennis. Anyone else would like to speak? I don't think I see any municipal officials here to speak to us tonight, so we'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. And I will call first on Brian Robison, who represents Groton and parts of Dryden and Lansing.
Thanks, Mike. And you've already mentioned that during the last week we lost a former member and to this legislature, and actually one of my predecessors, George Topman. I, like a bunch of folks sitting around here, open up the day by reading the obituaries, just because if you can read them, you're not there. So I knew George. I took, but I didn't know him well. And I was somewhat fascinated by what I read. In my eyes, he took volunteerism kind of to a whole new level, or at least a level that I'm not familiar with. And I'm gonna read to you. I'm sure you've all read it, but maybe not everyone from the public has read it. So just going to give you a kind of a little snapshot of what I read. He and his wife were involved with Fresh Air Kids. They were very, very involved with their community, with the McLean Church, McLean Community Council, McLean Rural Cemetery. Is involved with the Boy Scouts. I know that he was very active with the Groton Business Association. 62 years he was involved with the McLean Fire Department. That's 10 years before I was born. I mean, that is a long time. And of course, he was an officer and a chief for many years and so on and so forth. He was involved in the Groton Town Planning Board for 33 years, and he chaired it for 30. 37 years a member of the Groton Rotary, was a member of the Tompkins County IDA, Tompkins County Emergency Management Council, and I just kind of stopped writing at that point. I know there was a lot of other stuff that was in there. He was, a patriot, I guess, from reading that. You can deduct from that. Right out of high school, he was in the regular Army, and up until shortly before he died, he was involved in the Salvation Army. Quite a resume for this guy. He's from my district, and I know that our district has lost a good public servant and a good volunteer. And I want to wish my condolences to his wife, Norma, and really to the whole town of Groton, and specifically the area in McLean. He was the unofficial mayor. They don't have a mayor. But if they did, I'm sure he would have been it for a long, long time. So, again, condolences to his wife and to his extended family and, of course, the whole community there. And we should all thank him for his service, not only to this body, but just his volunteering in general. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. Did anyone else want to speak about George?
Leslie? There must be something about the legislators from Groton that I attract, because they always sit next to me. George Stottman sat on the other side of me, and we became quite the friends. George was a really great gentleman. I did learn a lot about volunteer firefighting, in the art of firefighting, from George. And so I really do want to appreciate him just being the person he was, always just kind to me as an individual, and willing to serve. Often George will say, "I don't know what's going on," but there's always the one nugget of something he'd say that somebody said that make me think I have to vote differently.
you know, we'd have these conversations about how you're going to vote. And he said, I'm not sure what's going on in this particular one, but so-and-so just said there that tells me I have to vote differently on it. So I really do. I did miss him when he left this body, and certainly want to express my deepest condolences to his family and to the community of Groton, because I know they have lost a stellar public servant.
If I could just add that we learned of George's passing while a number of us were at NYSAC over the weekend, and we were saddened, but it also reminded me that George was always someone who went to the NYSAC meetings to learn, to participate. And what he really liked was if there was an important person there, like the governor, to try to get an opportunity to get his picture taken with him. And he had a big scrapbook that he kept over the years, a wonderful hobby of having photographs where he'd met interesting people and had those photographs. He brought them in to show us one time. Very, very nice. And he worked hard at NYSAC. The other thing I just want to mention, philosophy which I heard him say over and over again, had to do with public hearings. And he would say, when you have a public hearing, listen to what the people have to say. Don't talk yourself. They're not here to hear from you. They're there to talk to you. And I think that was good advice from George on the legislature. All right. Thank you, Brian. Dooley?
There are other things we want to talk about.
I remember George having a rather free standing attitude toward protocol. He would say, I want to table this, but I want to talk about it first. And that other people do that too, but that was one of his refrains.
Thanks. We'll continue with privilege of the floor. Anyone else like to speak?
On George or on anything else?
Any topic.
Okay, I do.
Leslie McBean, Claiborne.
I do want to, I feel compelled, and I think I would be remiss if I don't, just say to the Robert's family how much I appreciate you all coming out and speaking and your persistence. I don't know the facts of the case. I don't know what's going on, but I do want to acknowledge the pain that you have shown in whatever is going on in this situation.
Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, on a more routine kind of matter. I don't know if I'm the only one who got this postcard from the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, but they are holding a session to which we've all been invited on February 26th from 9 to 12:30 in the morning. This year is the year that they update the county's Ag and Farmland Protection Plan. We will update it, but they will come to us with recommendations. They've spent all year listening and having sessions about that, and this is going to be one of their final sessions to sort of pull that together before they'll come to us with recommendations. So people are invited. It's at the Dryden VFW at 2272 Dryden Road. This is on Wednesday, February 26th, 9 to 12:30, and at 9, for only $10, you get a breakfast that I'm sure is going to be outstanding, and an update from their perspective on the Farm Bill, a young farmer panel from 10 to 11, and then a working session from 11 to 12:30 on that ag plan. An introduction to it, breakout sessions, and final thoughts. So I do encourage, I can't go because the Planning Advisory Board meets then, but I'm hoping that there will be some people here, whether they're from PEAK or not, who might like to go.
Thanks, Carol.
If you need this, I can pass it around.
Sorry.
Did you get these?
I got one in the mail. I don't know about the others.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks.
Will?
Thank you, Mike. I would like to second Leslin's thanks to the family for coming out and speaking to your situation. What I would hope you folks would understand is that as legislators, we are not normally able, or it's not appropriate us for to deal with individual situations. But what our concern is that our departments do treat the people we serve in the best possible way. And I think you have been heard, and I'm sure that there will be discussions going on to make sure that we're doing the best we can. So I wanted you just to know that, you know, it was not in any way for naught. So thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
I just would like to say to Yvonne Dawson, was when I knew you before, you referred to an earlier mix-up with the county. I think you were talking about the sick building syndrome problem from many years ago. And although you may not have been greeted with much welcome for what you brought up, I have to acknowledge that there was a problem in that building, and I'm grateful to you for having brought it up. I'm sorry to see you back with another problem, and thank you for coming.
Okay, shall we move on? For my report tonight, I would just like to mention again that we had a delegation that went to the New York State Association of Counties. We went out, some of us, Sunday or Monday. We had 2 days out there. We were hoping to have a third day, which would have been some meetings with our state legislators, the governor's staff, and otherwise. But unfortunately, the gathering storm sent everybody home early. But we got most of the meeting done. We attended workshops. We divided them up amongst ourselves so we could have some coverage. We had 6 legislators. They were Carol Chalk and Leslin McBean Claiborne. We had Will Burbank. We had Dan Klein. And who am I missing? Myself and our county administrator, Joe Mariana, and, of course, Peter Stein. And what I'd like to do at this point would be to turn to that group and ask if they might speak to a point or two that they learned at the NYSAC conference and or share with all of us. Who'd like to start? Carol?
If you'd like, I was going to, you would ask me to talk about the mega presentation in particular. And I was looking for this update. I asked
Gordon. Want me to come back? You want me to come back to you? Or?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Okay. Well,
that was not the main
we'll come back.
Topic.
Thanks, Mike. As usual, we have a series of workshops and a committee that I'm on, which they cannot develop committee, and a lot of one-to-one interactions, which I actually find the most valuable. But we also had the opportunity to hear a guest speaker, John Zogby, who you may know from the Zogby Polling Company, which he used to own. And he basically was making one pitch, which is we collectively in government need to be aware of the changing demographics of our country, basically, and the emergence of the millennial generation, which he reminded us is huge, poised to be as big ultimately as the baby boomers, but it's already defining the way the world works, and we need to understand their view of the world and what they have to offer, and it's very, very different than generations that have come before. And I took a whole bunch of notes, but I found that a very interesting thing, and my mind is still trying to get my brain around that. So,
I think he defined the millennials born between 1979 and 1996, I think.
Correct, yes. And essentially, they are connected to the world in a way that the previous generations simply have not, and so have a very different worldview.
I was also impressed with that, as I think most of us were, by that talk. Someone else want to speak? Leslin.
Sure.
Being Claiborne.
Because I am always the one for the whimsical. I liked John's speech, but also really took away. I had to write it down. Senga. Remember that? College education, not going, college educated,
going
not
nowhere.
Going anywhere. I had to write that down, and then, you know, I hope to talk with him some more about what do you mean by that? You know, not going anywhere is we're not going to move. We're educated, we're in your community, or we're college educated, and there's nothing out there for us. So we'll talk more about that. But he also, interesting enough, just talked so much about how powerful these two things are with that generation, and these two as well, in reaching the entire world. I loved the connection he made to just building an inclusive society with a generation of people who, you know, hip-hop, born in the Bronx, but you go to Turkey and it's all about hip-hop, or you go to Bangladesh and, you know, they're hip-hopping there just as much as they're hip-hopping here. And just how they're crossing barriers and making connections. But one of the workshops I went to had to do with aviation, because I have a keen interest in what's happening with airports. Hi, Bob. And I was frankly frightened, appalled, a little bit disturbed, not a little bit, very disturbed, to learn of the reliance on the fracking business for one of our regional airports. And because this is happening, that airport stays active and afloat and is potentially looking to expand and has just added a flight to Chicago because of the Southwest's interest in gas drilling and the gas traffic. So that was quite an eye-opener.
Leslin, do you want to say what airport that is?
That was the Elmira Corning Airport. So it was very interesting to hear that because they're right there on the border with Pennsylvania, and so they get a lot of traffic coming. As a matter of fact, one scenario the aviation director at the airport was sharing with us was over the holidays how busy they were because the industry had decided to fly all of their workers home. And she said, I said to them, so, oh, you're going to bus them in and we'll fly? And they said, no, they're just going to drive their cars and leave them there. And she realized that the parking lot was full. So for all the commuters, you know, there really wasn't room. So they're now looking at potential expanding, you know, their parking lot. But it was, she said, we're not going anywhere. We're going to continue to expand because this business is there. And so it was very interesting. I had a chance to talk a little bit after to get some more details on some of that. I mean, there are other factors, but that was one of the biggest factors. And, of course, having Corning within their community and a commitment from Corning, and it got me thinking about, you know, some of what we need to do here in our community. Not fracking by any means, but just in terms of some of the conversation we're having in our own airport strategic plan about engaging, re-engaging our business community and our large employers about, you know, making commitments with us. So that was interesting. There were other airports represented there as well, but that one really stood out to me, and I wanted to share that information.
Thank you, Leslin. Peter Stein.
I've gone to these meetings, I think, every opportunity that there was since I've been on the legislature. And I found, well, let's see, this one was a little different for me because I used to go to the one having to do with police and highways. And this time, because I've been made chair of the HSS committee, I went to the ones on HSS topics. So it was quite an education. When I went to the ones with cops, there was hardly a woman in the room. When I went to the one with HSS, there was hardly a man in the room other than me. It was quite apparent. But a couple of things that I wanted to say about this. One thing that's been a constant in all the times that I've gone to these meetings is people ranting and raving against the state of New York. That's pretty much a constant. About not giving the money back that they collect on telephones for the 911 center. There's 100 things that I've heard about. They all sort of sound the same. And this one sounded the same also, that mostly what I heard about when I went to the meetings on HSS is how the state had dropped the ball in doing various things. And except for one big thing, which I'll get to in a minute. And it was interesting to me that the two things that I heard that were complaining about the states had to do with some kind of a change in procedures when the states, and it's all too complicated for me to really remember, but basically when the state makes a change about how a reimbursement is made, whether it's made directly or indirectly or something like that. And in both cases, what they said was, well, yeah, this was in a transition period. They make lots of mistakes. People don't get reimbursed. People are hollering about where's their money going to go. But in the end, they fix it. And frankly, it reminded me of Obamacare, the same sort of thing, that there's a big program. You start out, you do something, you can't figure out how to do everything right, and you learn from your mistakes, and sooner or later it comes together. At least that's what I thought. the one hot item that I heard about was Joe's thing. Okay, I heard that from several things about asking. You know, I don't have to describe it. You know what I mean. And I went to a meeting, and the room was full, and there was not a single person sitting in the audience. Oh, this was a presentation about the tax plan, about the tax refund plan, where for 2 years the state will cover all increases in the property tax if you blah blah blah. Okay, and there wasn't a person sitting in that audience who had a good word to say about it. And I thought, boy, that's quite a challenge to be on the platform there defending what you were doing. And the usual things were said. And while I was sitting there, it occurred to me that this notion of what they're doing, namely to cover the... Let's forget about all of the big ideas about taking over Medicaid and the other mandate things. But just looking at what it actually they're doing is they're saying, okay, we'll cover the increase in the income tax for 2 years. And hooray, hooray, okay? And I started to think about it. What is the point of that? I mean, what possible argument can you make for that? Because, okay, you know, if they covered it forever, that'd be one thing. But they're not covering it forever, and they're not clamping it at zero. Namely, they're just saying, we're going to pay the increase for 2 years. And what happens in year three? What happens is that what people always complain about increasing taxes, they say, yeah, okay, it's only $12 a year this year, but that's always going to be on top of another $12, and it's going to add up to money. And, of course, what's going to happen is that the little checks they're saying are going to sit with the base, and all the time in year three, bang, it's going to go way up like that. Now, what in the world were they thinking when they did it? And I realized what they were thinking is very clear. It's a very good thing. Who profits? Who profits is the one that says, I kept the taxes from raising just before Election Day. And I asked the people on the program, could they give me some other rationale for this peculiar proposal. And it was nothing. And so I don't know. I wasn't on that committee. And can anybody give it? And somebody on the platform said, well, you gave sort of a pretty good one, I think. So.
Thanks, Peter.
Isn't that correct, Joe?
Dan?
Yeah. I spent the majority of my time at special sessions for newly elected officials. And it was meant to sort of give a little bit of exposure to a whole bunch of different topics. So that's what I was left with, just an impression of, even more of an impression of the scope of the things that counties do and that we do. And also, on top of that, I was struck by the way that Tompkins County is viewed in the rest of the state, which is a mixed review, but mostly things that it made me proud, and you know, simple, some things that are less glamorous, like assessment. You know, our assessment is done differently than everybody else's. But also our being instrumental in the formation of MEGA, which is really an excellent program, and people only have good things to say about it. And also about our county administrator's proposal to change the relationship in taxation between the counties and the state. So it made me proud to be from Tompkins County.
Thanks. Carol?
Without repeating, I Leslin and I got there, drove on Monday morning, so we missed the committee meeting where Joe got to present some of his ideas, I guess not the whole PowerPoint. But it was very clear when we got to the session that Peter was talking about, which was Bob Megna. He's the overarching budget director for all of New York State. And it was very interesting because he really did a very good job. He almost had me convinced that this was a good thing for us. And he listened non-defensively. He did do that. It was also clear that following Joe's presentation, and also in concert with stuff that NYSAC has been, you know, saying for years, the room was pretty united in their response to Mr. Megna. Both in asking and in stepping up the requests and the points. So starting with the fact that many people related to our initial idea, which was, are we at least going to get credit for shared services that we've already done? And Tompkins County has been in the forefront and done a lot of those, but there are other counties that said, yes, we also. And I had occasion to ask several people from the state about that, and pretty clear, you know, clearly that's something that they said, oh, yeah, you know, we hadn't really thought about that, and maybe they'll take that back. We'll see. And then hearing, you got this sense in some of the press reports leading up to NYSAC, a weariness with the language that we've been using about mandate relief. And I think what I heard coming out of Joe's presentation and people referring to it was sort of a new language to talk about it that people were starting to use. I heard some movement possibly on Medicaid relief from people in the state, and but Megna referred to that. We'll see if it's, you know, you need the transcript and see exactly how it was worded, because I know they're all experts at that. And then a sense of the room of this overarching notion that Joe was able to introduce, I think, that the fundamental flaw being one that you've got one entity, New York State, designing programs, and they're not the ones responsible to fund them. We are. And that how do you ever get to true cost-cutting if that's how you set it up? And the room, it was just really interesting to hear the whole room, and the room was very full, it was a big room, one after another, people making that point in similar kinds of ways. So that was impressive. Tidbits, just from that session, there was another, or no, it was a session right before that, there, about Tompkins County. In addition to people having the impression that they do, there was a listing distributed at a tax exemption, property tax exemptions in New York State session, that ranked counties by the percentage of property and amount of property that's tax exempt. And guess who's on the top of the list? Tompkins had the listing ranges from 40%, over 40% of the 57 counties, they don't list New York City, down to 7%, and we are at the top of the list at 40-something percent. So that was a tidbit. And then the other thing that I found interesting, I stopped by a table. Most of the tables of exhibitors tend to be people who have something to sell. And they're interesting, a lot of them, and they have a lot to say, and they give out great candy. But there was a woman from Westchester, an organization in Westchester County called Grassroots Environmental Education. I believe it's quite expensive to have a table in a place like NYSAC. And she had a table not asking us to buy anything at all, but giving out information. This is a pamphlet I'll circulate, How Green Is My Town? Or county or municipality, 64 things every village, town, or county can do. We've done a lot of them, but she's also somebody who is offering to be a go-between and pass along resolutions that have been passed by counties or towns across the state to each other so that we don't each have to reinvent the wheel. So I'll pass that around. And then...
Carol, could I go to Joe Mega? And then come back to you about Mega?
You certainly can.
Is there something else
now
you wanted to mention?
I've gotten all my notes finally ready about
okay.
Mega.
Okay, let's let Joe, because we've been talking about Joe's presentation, and let's go back to him. And then I know Martha has some questions and others, I'm sure.
Oh, if you want to keep talking about it, that's fine. That's great.
Oh, let
thank
your head
you
swell now.
Thank you for the compliments. I do think we had an effect on the conference. When we went to the Taxation and Finance Committee, there was a resolution in the packet that spoke to the freeze, but it was fairly mild, and so we had a good conversation about that, a lot of editing to that resolution, so that by the time it got done, I think we all know that those big packets of resolutions, Andrew Cuomo doesn't go home at night and read them, but in terms of how NYSAC makes a case, it's important. And it turned a bit toward the kind of argument we've been making. And then we made it throughout the conference, and I do think it had an impact. I think it has given folks a different way of describing the concern. And so you know the wave of email today has been Tompkins 2.0, so that as others try to explain this situation in their communities, they're talking about Tompkins 2.0 as the way they're going to approach it. So I thought on that front we did really well. And I appreciate the legislature's support to allow it to get there. It was important. But let me say, too, that wasn't the only part of the conference. You've talked about some other things that went on. We had a couple of people who were presenters at the conference. I was a moderator at a presentation by our Maureen Reynolds, who spoke for about an hour about the digitization of records. And I have to tell you, it was, and I heard it from others there, it was the best presentation of the entire conference. She did a great job explaining what we've done over the past several years to take 9,000 boxes of records that had 200 years of information. Instead of building a building to house those records, we put them into electrons and put them into machines. And it was really a very good presentation. So I think she reflected very well on the county. Lee Shurtleff was a part of a panel that explained financing for interoperable communications. I didn't attend that, but some of you did.
I attended, heard it was and he did a great job. He was the best panelist there, yeah. Most information.
So I feel very good about what we were able to provide to the conference. We always get a lot from the conference. I think this time we might have been able to provide some things to the group as well. So I felt pretty good about it.
Thank you, Joe, and thanks for carrying our message through you to the NYSAC conference. And hopefully the governor will sit down and read that.
Those resolutions.
Carol?
Oh, so then I was just going to say, I asked Kathy to put in your red packets the mega press release that came out. You know, as you've heard, we really had been very well prepared to join them in a press conference, and I guess by the time everything else got canceled, the sense was that there wouldn't be any press there to attend. But they have promised to come to Ithaca and Tompkins County and do a press conference with us at a future point, maybe after they get the first few people signed up. They did they did a really effective, super great session about the program. Hard to tell exactly how many people there were in the room. There were, I think, about 40, maybe 40 people in the room, but who became very engaged, asking very specific questions about it. They did a great job summarizing what the program is all about, crediting New York State for the enabling legislation that that allows this, these remote net metering arrangements, whereby one can you can build up to 2 megawatts of either solar or micro hydro. And 2 megawatts is not so micro, but hydropower at restored sites. These aren't going to be new hydro sites. They'll be restored hydro. Crediting both New York State for having set up the capability to do that, to match buildings and communities either with land that we own or land at remote sites that somebody else owns. And crediting Tompkins County really much more than they needed to for our role in being the chief administrative county, helping them get this going. And I will claim some credit for pushing them to not only achieve their traditional aim for us, which is the lower price of power for us and 20-some-odd counties around the state and up to 200 municipalities and educational institutions and other nonprofits around the state. They've done a great job doing that, but this new way of being able to build renewables is really a way for counties, municipalities, and institutions to save dollars, to scale up, to show that the generation of renewable power can be scaled up, to create jobs, because the two installers they've found and they have contracted with to set up these one-to-one relationships while they are big national companies, the PV company has literally $3 billion of cash available. They don't have to go out for loans and can ramp up right away. They have local offices around New York State in three places, as does the Gravity Renewables. It was Solar City is the PV, and a company called Gravity Renewables is the hydro company. So they will be able to hire installers locally. They will need that. They're not bringing in people from California to actually do the installations. They'll need that built, and at the same time being able to generate income where the counties or municipalities or institutions don't have the land available. Your local farmers or other rural or suburban land that isn't being used for other things will be used for this, and there'll be a fee paid, a lease fee paid for that. So they're really achieving a lot of aims, and they were able to make it very understandable. They have people who are already interested in signing up. There's a lot between now and then, but they're talking about ramping it up pretty quickly. And there is a lot more detail in your packet in the press release.
Thank you, Carol.
Questions?
I think that's another feather in the bonnet for Tompkins County. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to turn to Martha. Martha, you wanted to join us, I know, but right. Weren't able to come this year. But go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't able to go, but so I really missed it. sounds like that you really had an impact. Did you go to the chairs and executives meeting, and did that happen usually on Tuesday, right?
I was moderating a panel, so
I
couldn't.
I wasn't at that one.
Okay, because I mean, what the impact of the resolutions, and as Joe, as you're talking about the changing the language, that becomes NYSAC's lobbying position. So it's not that anybody reads, maybe some people read the exact resolutions, but that becomes NYSAC's lobbying position. And when he sits with county legislators, with state legislators, when he sits with, when Aquario sits with leadership, that's the position. I had the opportunity to talk a little bit about, you know, your proposal with the political director of NYSET, the teachers union. They are furious about this package of proposals from the governor, and I gave him your name. Gave him your name and contact information because, and I said what I said before, that I think you, that counties, towns, cities, and, you know, and you know, and schools ought to collaborate on a pushback on this because, you know, Peter is exactly right. There's, it's not even, you know, the level of, it's so obvious how political it is, and yet it'll probably work because they all get to write their names on the checks, I guess. But I think that there's, you know, it's terrific if they really have bought into that. Did you get to talk to Steve Aquario particularly about it?
Yeah, I did.
And his, you know, his sense of it?
Well, he certainly gets it because it's really the mandate relief message he's been talking about for years. I think he probably appreciated it coming from rank and file as opposed to coming from him. It makes it easier for him to advocate it to the governor if it's coming from the grassroots. I think Steve has to be sensitive to, you know, the relationship side of things, so he'll always be a little more cautious maybe than his membership. But I think all of us know this is the way you push things forward from kind of our level up. So he seemed fine.
Good. I mean, you know, we've all been yammering about mandate relief for a long time, but it sounds like this is the first time you really put it together as an alternative proposal. Thank you, Joe.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. For all of you who've just talked about the governor's proposal, Kevin McCabe is going to be at the Common Council Chambers Friday morning, 11 a.m., to take your questions. So I can hardly wait.
Leslie McBean, Claiborne.
Thank you. By the same token, and Joe said it nicely, there are, you know, folks there who were rightfully nervous about the proposal. I happened to have an opportunity to talk with someone who didn't know I was necessarily from Tompkins County just then. And we were really talking about that. You know, they thought, you know, it was a little too large as a first approach, and maybe it should be smaller baby steps. So there was some nervousness around it, but generally a lot of support. I wanted to very quickly say, but I've lost my jail expansion people here, and hope that they can appreciate a lot of what we do in Tompkins County. The corrections, whatever it was called, workshop that didn't turn out to be what we thought it would be, really had counties talking about, you know, what are some of the alternatives to incarceration programs they have, and most of them have exactly the same things we're doing. But the one of the presenters passed around the report from, I don't know what the main state committee is or state department is, that shows, you know, what your jail population is or the statistics. And it was interesting to see that for sentence and pre-sentence people, you know, where folks were. Tompkins County was hovering somewhere around 51% pre-sentence people in our jail, 49% sentence people. So we're kind of 50-50 is what the report said. But our neighbors in Syracuse, in one of their facilities, was somewhere at 95% pre-sentence people in their facility and 5% sentence people. So I'm hoping that our jail expansion friends will appreciate the work that we're doing to not have those kind of stats in Tompkins County. 95% pre-sentence and 5% sentence in our facility is not anything to be happy about, and we're not there. So I wanted to share that information.
Thanks. If I could just finish the NYSAC discussion with one really nice thing about the conference I wanted to bring to everybody's attention. The NYSAC group hosted a delegation from Kenya. And I think there were probably 15 to 20 members of their county's governments. Kenya has recently adopted a new constitution in that country, and we were told it's modeled on the United States Constitution, and that their counties have a relationship similar to our states. They really wanted to come and learn from us in New York how we have intercommunication among the counties so that they can learn from each other. They were interesting people. They spoke English very well, of course, because it's a former British colony. And I think the people at NYSAC were proud to have them there with us and to share. They attended the sessions the same as all of us. It was a nice experience. Well, let's move on. Have some chair's appointments I want to make tonight. To the Tompkins County Area Development Board of Directors, Will Burbank. The Chamber of Commerce, Michael Lane, and the designated seat, and Jim Dennis is the alternate. To Extension Service, Will Burbank and Dave McKenna. To the Local Advisory Board on Assessment Review, Caroline Danby, Dan Klein, Newfield Enfield, Dave McKenna, Groton, Brian Robinson, Dryden, Mike Lane, and Martha Robertson. Town of Ithaca, Will Burbank, Dooley Kiefer, Peter Stein. Lansing, Mike Sigler, Dooley Kiefer. Ulysses, James Dennis. City of Ithaca, Carol Chalk, Kathy Luz Herrera, Leslie McBean Claiborne. To the Workforce Diversity Inclusion Committee, of course, Leslie McBean Claiborne will be serving as our chair. To the Ethics Advisory Board, Dooley Kiefer as the chair. To the Ithaca Metropolitan Planning Organization, that's the ITCTC Policy Committee, Dooley Kiefer, and Michael Lane as the alternate representative. The Special Negotiating Team to conduct collective negotiations with employee organizations, we're reaffirming Jim Dennis, Brian Robinson, Anita Fitzpatrick, and Joe Mariana. For the Cornell Vet School Incinerator Project, Dooley Kiefer, delegate, and Beverly Lives, the alternate. To the Municipal Gas, Electric and Gas Alliance, Michael Stamm, Barbara Blanchard, Stuart Stein. And the Civil War Commemoration Commission, Lance Heidig, term through 2015. Reports by the County Administrator.
Thank you, Mike. We've talked about much of what I had wanted to talk about with respect to NYSAC and MEGA and some other things. Just by way of announcement, I do want to remind everybody that tomorrow evening between 5 and 7 at the Public Library is the Martin Luther King Jr. Art and Poetry exhibit, and I think the awards will be given out tomorrow, so it's going to be a nice event over there if you'd like to attend that. I think that's my only update announcement, but I would like tonight to do something that we've done now for the last 6 years, and I promise this will be the last PowerPoint that I do for a little while, at least. But every year at the end of the year, we try to update you on the accomplishments of departments that have occurred over the prior year. And so what I'd like to do tonight is to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes and go in a very rapid fashion through a lot of slides. I'll talk through it, but also this is posted on our website because I think it's pretty important that people out there who pay our taxes and want to get good services have a sense of what we've accomplished over the past year, at least in terms of the major accomplishments by departments. So if we can hit the right button to get...
Joe, may I just add quickly on the Martin Luther King Poetry Contest that it's important for people to know, because there are several of them, it's important for people to know that that is from the Human Rights Commission, our own department.
Yes. So do we have power for the PowerPoint? Kathy?
Yes.
Oh, I know you'll be crushed if this doesn't come up.
You'll just have to read it.
I can't read it. Well,
should we come back to it?
you can share.
Can we give the lights somehow?
So again, I'm going to go through here really quickly and slow me down if there's anything you'd like to talk about. And it's alphabetized, so we begin with the airport. I think everybody knows that the key event that occurred over the course of the year happened early in the year, and that's with the sequestration and the threat to close contract towers, including ours. I think this county did a really good job in leading the opposition to that issue, and I think we may have well changed the course of some federal action. That isn't all that we did, though. There are some other things that were happening last year that could have had an adverse effect on us, including the proposal to shift a lot of security duties from the TSA to the airport, which would have had a significant effect on the cost structure out there and put added pressure on our finances. We were able to beat that back. We completed a good capital project last year with the operations the crash fire rescue building and adding the operations center to that. We started a feasibility study for terminal security improvements. We did some work on the terminal ramp. And in keeping with the green approach at the airport, we began testing low-grow grass mix.
Can I get some of that?
Which, if it works, will significantly reduce the maintenance requirements at the airport and the carbon footprint. Assessment, there's nobody who does assessing a property as well as we do. They might tie, but they can't do better. It's the 15th year that we've been really at the gold standard of assessment, which is assessing at the uniform percent of value. This year, what's called an annual equity maintenance program was done digitally instead of manually. In doing that one transformation into a digital approach, we save 14,000 pieces of paper that usually goes along with that process. The STAR program, all of us know, was changed this year. The state had basically a start-all-over approach where you had to re-register for STAR. To date, we're at 85% of the STAR recipients registering, with just a few remaining. Some other things in terms of digitizing process. And this is pretty interesting. The last bullet I'll stick with for a second. It's the second generation of smart work. In the first generation, we relied a lot on consultants to come in to help facilitate things. We've now been through enough of these that there are times when smart work can be done internally by people who have learned how to do this themselves. And that happened in assessment with some specialized assessing. In the assigned counsel's office, and this is kind of late in the year, we were advised of a $200,000 grant award. This is through the Office of Indigent Legal Services. It's a three-year grant, so the $200,000 is spread over 3 years. But in being given that grant, we now have the capacity to bring in a defender-based sentencing advocacy service. I don't have to explain what it is. It's one that we wanted to do years ago, couldn't afford it. Now we can, so we can introduce yet another ATI program. And this is important, too. Our caseload levels, which is really an indicator of quality, are right where they should be in terms of an ABA standard, and not many counties in New York State can make that claim that they're at that standard. Board of Elections continues to do a lot of good things. Centralized scanner for absentee and affidavit ballots. They consolidated some polling sites to save some money and accommodate voters. I guess I would skip down to the last bullet. This year you saw a lot of iPads as opposed to paper at polling sites, and this was an opportunity to make it easier to get instructions and look up voters. So that transformation has been made. Here in the legislature, the clerk of the legislature was central to the move of the legislature to its new offices and chambers. You know what a significant task that was. Here again, digitizing. The subject files and reports were digitized. You can now search those easily online. They were filed in Laserfiche, which is the vehicle that we use to store our records now. And, of course, we're video streaming. And that video streaming, if you want to look up a record of a meeting and you want to watch it, you can. It's been archived. COFA did a lot. At the beginning of the year was the move to the annex, and in doing that, there's been over 2.5 times increase in the number of walk-in clients to COFA. The PERS machines, you know how important these are to really the security of a lot of people who live in this community. PERS are the call for help buttons, basically, in homes. All of them are now upgraded to a new and better technology. Countywide senior needs assessments, results of that were disseminated. That really gives good policy advice to a lot of agencies and individuals in the community in terms of how to deal with senior needs. I would skip to the last, second to the last one, a lot of progress also on that care transitions program to help people transition out of a hospital setting into a home setting. In my office, we did a variety of things, had a variety of accomplishments this year. We've talked about many of them already, so I won't burden you with it. But it includes the living wage. Broadband was a huge achievement this year, and you know Paula was very much involved in that with many of you, including Dave, who co-chaired the effort. Working with Lesnar and WDIC on diversity and inclusion policy, the new website that Marsha was involved in, the new grants management webpage that Paula was involved in. And again, we helped a bit on the federal sequestration problem at the airport. In the county clerk's office, the land documents are now being electronically recorded. So again, it's more of the digitization of things, saving paper. More archives grants that have helped us get to where we are currently, another $150,000. We love acronyms, so we implemented TEASER, I think it's pronounced. TEASER is really the governing agreement that all of the municipalities who are now in a shared service arrangement with us for digitizing records using our technologies are working within this new governing structure. Good things at DMV and with veterans, the Veterans Designation Program that we've talked about. The DA stayed busy, 187 felonies. You recall a couple years ago an initiative to accelerate collections of stop DWI fines. We're up to $113,000, and you know those collections have been very anemic before that. And some grant money was brought down to help with prosecution. Emergency response, a lot going on there. We introduced Christina Dravis at the last meeting, so we have our new communication center manager. You created a new, what's now called a professional development coordinator. We called it quality assurance back in the budget days. Hugely important addition to that roster. We got better at the emergency operations center. We've involved all of our departments in that. And Lee practically single-handedly wrote a grants proposal that received a $2.9 million award to spread interoperable across county lines. Facilities, these chambers, facilities very much involved in that. They went back then rehabbed the old court space that you vacated to make a new court space. They completed energy improvements at the PSB. They've been very much involved in the day reporting relocation that will move over to the Human Services Building and the jail renovation project. They hired an assistant director, which is really important because I think all of us know how burdened ARL was, and we hired a good one. And, again, they maintained a lot of square footage at a very low price. Finance, you'll notice we have two slides here. It's because at one time we actually had two finance directors, so we figured they warranted two slides. So we hired a new director. Rick, who's sitting next to me, was hired during the course of last year. We maintained a very strong credit rating. We made a run for the gold standard there of AAA. Not quite, but we're still really good. We have a new fund balance policy that the legislature approved. Rick was involved in the financing of several projects at enviable rates of interest. Good audit reports. Helped out our cousins, TC3 and TCAT, with cash flow needs. Did some upgrading of our accounting software, has improved our accounting work for the consortium, the health benefits consortium that we do on their behalf. We did some automation with timesheets. We have great property tax compliance. So we accomplished a great deal in finance last year through that transition. In health, a lot of planning efforts, and Frank Krupa has been really good about keeping the legislature informed about all of those efforts and their importance, the strategic plan, the community health assessment, and the community health improvement plan, all kind of woven together, occurred last year. Good results in programming. Bad rollout by the state of a new takeover of early intervention administration that the county had to help the state get through. And in terms of electronics, significant progress on this new environmental health system that is going to be really important for our productivity, but will also be, we think, a permit system that other municipalities in the county can use. In highway, You're familiar with these big projects, Hanshaw Forestone Bridge, West Seneca Road Bridge. All were at least commenced last year, and a lot of local projects as well. Also on highway, we did finish the new fuel facility. Jeff is very proud of the next one. The first stainless steel dump body on a snow and ice vehicle flew over my head, but apparently you spend a little bit more at the front end. You can save a lot at the end when it goes out for resale because of the way they rust or don't rust. And this is a little internal consolidation. Highway is doing most, if not all, of the vehicle maintenance now for other county departments. So very slowly over time, we've been able to basically insource that. Human rights. Karen Baer was hired as the new director. They've done a lot of outreach programming in human rights this year. There's a list of them on this sheet. And, again, this is on our webpage, so you can look at that. There's a new process there of pre-complaint conciliation, trying to get people into a good form to work through complaints as they come in. And you recall that this year was the 50th year for our human rights effort, and that was recognized at the Dorothy Cutten Human Rights Day. Information technology, a lot was done. I don't know that I need to go through all of these. I think we've kind of said what Greg and his staff have done over the past several years, and it continues. And we could not be as productive as we are without the work that IT has done. Mental health, lots of changes in mental health. They're transitioning to the home health home coordination model. That's different than a case management model. Sue Romanchek has explained that to all of us many times, and we're beginning to understand what that means. It is very much an environment focused on compliance these days. The department has made turns to be able to adjust to that new environment. The middle bullet is important. A long vacant deputy commissioner position was filled. This has been vacant for as long as I've been here, and I think long before. And with the hiring of Mary Hayes, we have good support at the top for that department. And when you look at the numbers at the bottom of that slide, you realize how essential this service is. We serve over 2,800 individuals, and these are unduplicated individuals. So there's a large volume of clients that we serve and provide great services. Personnel, you gave us some money in the 2013 budget to begin a new career development and proficiency training program. That has been launched, I think, very successfully, and we are finally at a point now where we have mandatory supervisory training. So we're training all of our new supervisors in the way to handle that very difficult job. Some webpage improvements, more digitization here, and more outreach and personnel. And planning. The Cleaner, Greener Southern Tier plan was approved. Lots of grant money, $1.9 million, went along with that, much of which went to Tompkins County. So it went beyond the region. Much of it stayed here. Significant progress on the comp plan update, which is a major undertaking and a very inclusive process in asking the community to provide input. Assisted the Solar Tompkins Group. You know what that is. We talked about it earlier tonight. That's to expand solar. The housing fund. Now, this is an important bullet, and I think it will become more relevant in the coming months. We've completed our funding commitment to the first 6 years of the housing fund program. We now need to figure out what the next generation of that program is going to be. So that will be a part of our conversation over the next several months. And the new Keega Lake Blue Way Trail Plan. Probation, and we're getting through the alphabet, so there's not much more time here. Probation worked with the sheriff's correction staff in teaching Thinking for a Change group to sentenced inmates. This is really an effort to reduce recidivism. We're very much involved in some workplace violence prevention activities. That's a very serious effort that we have undertaken to address those concerns and needs. And very much involved also in the relocation of day reporting into the Human Services Building. Sheriff's Office, there's an overlap here. They're thinking for a change. They're very proud of that, so they wanted that on their list of accomplishments. Overtime costs continue to go down, and the Sheriff's Office was recognized as a Stop DWI Large Agency of the Year in 2013. Social Services, in terms of accomplishments, it's just keeping up. And they didn't talk about many new initiatives. It's just keeping up with a level of demand that seems to stay high in spite of the fact that the economy seems to be getting better. And you can see some of the statistics on this list. And again, I think we've talked a lot at budget time about the burdens that are placed on social services, and it is really amazing that they can, in fact, keep up. Solid waste, another big year for solid waste. Major initiative this year was the food scrap recycling. We've got a contract with a local firm to do the composting. We got a state grant, a major grant, to help pay for the equipment needed there. And there's a residential pilot that is it's either underway or about to get underway. Website is new and fresh, a lot more in the way of outreach that's coming out of solid waste. Workforce investment, large client base here, 2,400 people. We placed 963 folks who came to us in jobs with a decent average wage of $27,000. We drew down a lot of federal funds that helped provide training for individuals who had found themselves unemployed. They did a high-tech career fair, which I think was the first that they have done that really focused on connecting local people with high-wage jobs. And in partnership with BOCES and Newfield, did a youth industry networking event to tell young people what jobs are out there for them. And the last, I think this is the last slide, youth services used the results of a 2012 assessment to really shape programming goals and provide funding recommendations. And you heard this a lot from Amy during your budget presentation. That department has really worked hard to align resources with priorities. That's what this bullet refers to. Collaborations with the towns to get a bigger bang for the buck, to get youth dollars invested in more youth employment opportunities, and did receive a community foundation grant to implement the results-based accountability work that has been pioneered at Youth Services. And I think that is it, and that's as fast as I can talk, and that ain't all. We've tried to highlight the major accomplishments of each department. There are, as you know, a lot more underneath these major things. So thank you for the time.
Thanks, Joe.
To do that.
Questions? Jim Dennis' hand first, then Martha Robertson.
Joe, great presentation. Are you going to be asking for an executive session?
I forgot to say that. I am going to be asking for an executive session to talk about labor negotiations.
Thank you.
Martha?
That's pretty breathtaking. That's a fantastic list. Thank you, Joe, and our thanks to the entire staff. It's really impressive. The courtroom now out of our old chambers,
right.
I know there was an open house and it got snowed out. Is the open house rescheduled yet?
Not that I've heard.
Okay. Do you happen to know what the price tag of that was and how much of it we paid for?
I think Arell has given me the information. I can't remember now. I do believe that the court system, the OCA, will be paying us because they've considered it a tenant improvement. So I believe that we will not be out of pocket for those improvements.
You remember 4 years ago when we were looking at a $3.5 million, like the base bid was $3.5 million to renovate massive parts of that building.
Right.
Should I not even talk about that because they might have forgotten? But
why don't we let Joe see if he can't get that information for you?
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything else anything else on the docket that they want us to do?
There's actually a next phase that's happening almost as we speak. So the chambers have been refurbished and they're done. But the space that was vacated by COFA is going to be renovated and repurposed for other court uses. That will be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars as well. We will have to front-end finance that, but Arell is optimistic that the state will pay for that as well.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Will, then Carol.
Executive session also, is there also not a possibility of talking about litigation?
Yes.
Okay.
You ruined my report.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Carol.
Sorry if I missed this. Is it possible to have this electronically or posted somewhere?
It's on our webpage.
Great.
And I think it's on maybe on the front page, maybe.
County admin page.
Thank you. And I would join Joe and say that thanks to the wonderful employees we have and the good ideas that staff and administration and all of them put forward, we continue to be one of the leading counties out there. Let's move to Jonathan Wood.
I don't have a report, but I'll give a brief update on our litigation in executive session.
Okay. Any questions for John? Director of Finance, Rick Snyder.
Thank you. I'd like to give the December 2013 sales tax report. You'll find a copy of the sheets in your red folders. If you'd like to review that with me, the first sheet is the tax distribution summary for 2013. I'd like to bring to your attention that the sales tax distributions for the fourth quarter for the county were up 2.86% compared to last year. That's if you go down to the midsection of this sheet, the tax distribution summary, if you compare the two quarters, we're up 2.86% compared to last year. Moving over to the right side of the sheet, looking at just the county's portion, the year-to-date tax distributions totaled $32,466,434 compared to $31,668,760 in 2012. This represents an increase of 2.52%. So that's a year-to-date increase of 2.52%. According to this sales tax distribution summary, we came in at 100.5% of budget. So we were just a little bit over our recommended budget figure for the year. The second page is a historical representation of the Tompkins County sales tax receipt. Sales tax distributions for the fourth and final quarter were up in all categories. If you go across, looking at the total received, the county share, the town village share, and the city share, each of those categories have gone up over 2012. And the county's portion of sales tax, looking at the second column for the fourth quarter, was $8,254,386 compared to the previous year where it was just $8,024,641. Again, that represented an increase of 2.86% for the quarter. And so that you could have an even better idea of how this has improved over time. There are 17 years worth of data from beginning to end, the last few years shown broke down by quarter. And that concludes my report for tonight.
Thank you, Rick. Questions for Rick? Jim.
Just a comment, Rick. That's a wonderful report, especially showing the history and how things have changed over all that time. That's pretty amazing. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We would suspend just for a minute to put the screens up. Let's move on to the consent agenda. I have some advisory board appointments to read. To the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Larry Roberts, Rebecca Norman, Patricia Carey. To the Public Information Advisory Board, Pat Pryor. To the Library Board of Trustees, Helena Maria Viramontes. To the Soil and Water Conservation District, James Dennis and David McKenna. The resolutions. Out of budget and capital, Resolution A. Again, if anyone wants this pulled off, just say so. a delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500. That's ID 4613. Out of Health and Human Services, authorization to increase in hours, Community Health Nurse, Division of Community Health, Health Department. That's ID 4588. Authorizing changes in charge structure, Diabetes Prevention Program, out of the Health Department, ID 4571. From Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution D, budget adjustment to reappropriate funds for the Covered Bridge Preservation Project, Town of Newfield, and to use a portion of highway fund balance, ID 4580. From the Government Operations Committee, resolution supporting, that's Resolution E, supporting the passage of legislation to allow the New York State and local primary election to coincide with federal primary election. That's ID 4619. Resolution F, adoption of list of designated officers.
Off, that one off.
That's off.
Did I miss my chance to get E off? I'm sorry.
You want to pull it?
Yes.
All right, ENF. Out of the, we also have Resolution G, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under, ID 4614. Resolution H, approval of designations of successors, ID 4605. Correction of tax roll, which is Resolution I, solid waste fees, City of Ithaca. ID 4603, and lastly, Resolution J, to amend Resolution Number 258 of December 18, 2012, determination and certification of county clerk's allowances, annual expenses for administering mortgage tax, ID 4574. Wondered if I could have a motion to approve the consent agenda. Dave McKenna, seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's go to standing committees. Jim Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have one item, and it is the adoption of a cash management and investment policy, and I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Brian Robinson. Discussion? Jim?
One comment. Attached to the agenda was the explanation put forward by Rick, and we've had that many years. And if anyone has any questions, at the committee we talked about it, and we drew lots to decide who would ask the question, why can't credit unions be involved in this? And the answer was given the same for 8 years in a row. They're not real banks designated.
What was
by,
that?
They're not officially designated by New York State banks that can take local funds, local government funds. So at that point, I think any questions you have should be forwarded to Rick right now.
Questions? Kathy?
I just have a comment. You actually, I hope, have two items, also Resolution M, which I think a member of our staff here is waiting for.
Under facilities.
Okay.
It's on
the
list,
Kat. Carol? I'm sorry, are we... Are,
sure.
Where are we?
I will do that when we get to that committee. Facilities is what you're speaking of, right, Kathy?
Actually, it hasn't been to facilities. At the last time it was done, it was with budget. That's the version that's in our packet.
You're talking about the airport resolution?
That's right.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Jim to move that.
Right.
Great.
When we get done with it here. Carol.
I was just curious as to whether there was any discussion at the committee about, well, first I want to know, do we do this every year?
Yes.
We renew this every year, yes. So there's a chance to do it again. But was there any discussion about keeping a portion of our funds in socially responsible investments or accounts, or using our cash investment to further
We hadn't changed the investments at all from what was in the previous year. The only thing that changed was on page 27, we removed Bank of America because they're no longer servicing us. But most of our investments right now are very simple, short-term money market type accounts. We haven't been going out with anything like, you know, in mutual funds or stocks or anything like that. Pension funds do invest in those diversified different products, but we stay very, very safe. The schedule of eligible securities is on page 24 in your packet.
So I saw that. You know, there are institutions that do talk about policies. You know, we don't have big bucks to impact like some institutions do, but it still is something that, that some talk about. And
Joe,
if we ever had.
We are very highly regulated in terms of how we can invest our money. So we can't buy stocks. We can't do those kinds of things. It's basically in insured bank accounts and
treasury bonds,
treasury bonds,
bills,
things like
agencies,
that.
Things of that nature.
By law.
Okay, but are there money market accounts? There are some out there that, you know, that come from socially responsible places.
But these are money market accounts that are government-backed, or they're collateralized by the banks, and, of course, FDIC insurance for all the bank accounts that we have.
Right.
But it's a very limited, very ultra-safe investment portfolio.
As I would argue, socially responsible investing has proved to be much steadier in the market over the ups and downs. So it's something we might want to look into at some future time and just at least be able to know if there's options out there.
Thanks, Carol, for that suggestion.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jim? Jim, I wondered if you would move Resolution M.
Should we vote on this one first?
Oh, I'm ahead of myself. We've got to vote. We've got to vote on that resolution first. My apologies. Okay. Are we ready to vote on the policy question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Now will you move Resolution M for me, please?
Okay, I will do that. Authorizing the appropriation of funds from the contingency fund for the purpose of retaining expert consulting services for the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Jim?
Please note, all of you, the business development services proposed scope of work. I think it's pretty extensive, and certainly the airport administrator is here to answer any questions about that scope of work.
Questions. Bob, do you want to speak to this at all as to what we could be expecting from this person?
Yes. Let me start where our problems began, which I think started with the debacle with the control tower and the contract controllers. Which started a downward slide of passengers, exacerbated by the fact that airlines started to cut capacity. I was interested in Leslin's comments about Elmira. I'm very good friends with Anne Crook, and she's nothing if not positive because I saw her year-end report this afternoon, actually, and her figures are down 11% over 2012. So they're in a similar situation to us, and I think part of the problem is not just the control tower, but the fact that airlines are cutting capacity. If you don't have the seats available, then you're not going to have the employments. Part of cutting capacity is that you cut the choice, and that's another way of driving people to another airport. What we expect this person to do, and he is well connected in the industry, he is ex-Continental, which is now United. He has connections with all the three airlines that we deal with, and he has the ability to talk to the people that we need to have him talk to, those people who make decisions about schedules. And we are hoping that he will take the information that we give him, go meet with those airlines, and talk to them about improving our air service in terms of number of flights and in terms of the type of aircraft that we use.
Thank you, Bob. Peter Stein had a question.
Yeah. This is prompted by your remark about the director of the Elmira Airport, and I'm just made me wonder, do you have any idea of how Binghamton's doing and how Syracuse is doing? And the reason I ask the question is that if they're all down, I mean, is there really any chance that we can steal from them? That's who we'd be stealing from to increase our numbers. I just wonder, okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Well, Elmira's down 11%. Binghamton keep their cards very close to their chest. They don't release the information to me, even though I'm very friendly with the aviation director down there. I think he has instructions not to tell me anything. but I suspect that he is down a similar amount to Elmira and Ithaca. Syracuse, interestingly, is up, was up last year by about 1.2%, which doesn't sound like much. But if you add our passengers that we lost to their normal passenger load, which is around 1 million passengers a year, that could be the 1.2% right there.
Mike Sigler.
Did this go out to bid, or was this like a hiring situation?
It's a person that is known by members of the Air Service Board. They have spoken to him for about the last year or so. He is the husband of the director, used to be the director of Continental in Ithaca. She's now working for the Cougar Medical Center. But he's well known in the community, has good credentials, and was not necessary. We need to have somebody, we're very fortunate, I think, to have somebody who is local that can get the local information together. Rather than dealing with someone who, is from some other part of the country.
These kind of services are not required to be bid, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Because they're professional services, right. Is that right? I had Martha Robertson, then Jim.
I've been part of conversations in which we were hoping that, in particular, Cornell University would do whatever they could to, on their website with, when students are looking for how to, go to Cancun on spring break or whatever, and Ithaca College too, for the college and university to help us out here, to do a little bit of proactive marketing and felt that they have a real stake. That's a pretty low impact way that they can help us. Is there any progress on that? I see on the resolve or the whereas that was added, it mentions, glad to see that was added about support from higher education. I don't know if that's in Mr. Barr's scope of work or where would that be?
I think he would be part of the liaison with the university. As a matter of interest, we are beginning to do focus groups with Cornell, and we have one set up for February the 22nd, I think. That's something that Cornell has facilitated. We'll meet with some students and talk about how to best communicate with them, which is different from the way we used to communicate and the way I communicate with most people, using the means that they use to communicate, whatever those are.
Millennials, as Will was talking about. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
I think what's at stake here is the commercial viability of our airport, the model that we've been fortunate enough to have over the past number of years, where we haven't had to put county money into it. It's been supported as an enterprise by facilities charges, and I think that's been a remarkable record. So I'm hopeful that we can pass this resolution tonight and help support that effort to keep it viable.
Right, but the effort, this push for to work with Cornell and I think the college, that's partly Edwin Barr.
It is. Yeah.
Yes.
It is, and I think he will also provide some information that Cornell has asked for, which is the reliability of flights coming out of the airport. So they're trying to figure out how to best craft their message. They've asked us to develop some data that will help them do that. I think our consultant will allow us to do that. And I think, as Bob said, too, the idea of a student marketing effort is really inspired. That came to us from Cornell, and we're proceeding. We meet with them, as you know, quarterly. It will be on our agenda when we talk to them next week.
Are we ready to vote? This will be a short form roll call vote. And go ahead.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Any legislator wishing to be recorded as opposed? Thank you. That passes. Unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, for staying and talking to us about it. Public Safety Committee. Brian Robinson, Chair.
Hey. Thanks, Mike. Let me do the resolution first, if I can. Be resolution L. ID 4596, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. Any discussion? Another short form roll call vote, please.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
Thanks. I'm not sure that we have met since the last legislature meeting.
Well, then you don't have to give a report.
but I do have one thing. The members of the committee, I did put something on your desks tonight, which I wish you would kind of mull over between now and Monday, which is our next meeting. As promised, we are looking to form a study group on alternatives to incarceration. This outlines this. This is the work of, several meetings that some of us have had just trying to get a draft of the group and their charge. But please look it over, and my hope would be that by the end of the meeting on Monday that we would have enough of a consensus to move forward and start to gather that committee. Obviously, most of it's going to be comprised of ATI members. This is the start of that. So please do that.
Questions for Will.
Brian, was that in our packets? I'm not seeing that.
No, it's for...
I just for members of the committee. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
When and if this or another version of this is adopted, then certainly we would report that out.
Thank you. Carol, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. Anybody else? Very good. Thank you, Brian. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
We have nothing new to report. It's Black History Month. Encourage all of you to please look out for the activities that are happening in our community to participate in. Usually I have something for you all, but NYSEC took away my time, so I can quite get it together, but I will have something at our next meeting commemorating Black History Month. We continue to visit departments and make people aware of and rolling out our diversity policy. It's been well received thus far. I think we've gone through four departments now, and we are just continuing as a committee to bring it to the full attention of all staff.
Thank you. Questions? Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Well, this is awkward. Peter Stein is now chair, but he was not chair or a member of that committee when the last meeting took place.
Would anyone else want to report on that? Well, you get a pass on this one, Peter.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I accept it.
When's the next meeting?
Facilities and
when is the next meeting? Yeah, the next meeting is on the 11th at the usual time.
Not very long. Let's go to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Kathy Luz Herrera, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in a similar position to Peter. I don't have a committee report, but I can tell you that we're meeting Monday, March 17th. From 10:30 to 12:30, unless something comes up sooner than that that we need to meet about. Maybe we'll meet before a legislature meeting, but if there's budget items that need to come up, if there's a report, I'd love to hear it.
Yes, I'm in a mirror position to Kathy on this. And the answer is easy. There was no meeting since our last time that we reported.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move right along. Economic Development Committee.
Thanks, Mike.
Will Burbank is the chair.
Well, I am the chair, and I was the chair, and we did meet. In fact, we met right before this meeting, and I thank everybody who squeezed that in. Basically, what we did today was heard from the good folks at TCAD and about their plan of work for the coming year, which is very, very impressive. It is on their website, I believe, and we'd be happy to share it if anybody would like to know it. We will be meeting starting regularly on the first Monday of the month. Our next meeting will be Monday the 3rd. And the other thing we did is we collected ideas for committee goals per the request of Chairman Lane. We are trying to come up with some ideas that we'd like to do to accomplish this year.
Thank you.
And that concludes my report.
Questions? Boy, you're making this easy tonight. Ed, I see you've come in the back. Are you waiting for something tonight?
Yeah, stuff on GEO.
For the GEO stuff. Well, you timed it just right.
Resolution now.
Let's move to the Government Operations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a while since I've been a chair, so can people remind me of the proper etiquette? Do I do the report first or the resolutions first?
No matter what you do, we'll interrupt you.
When you have a staff person waiting, you might want to do the resolutions first.
Okay. Maybe I'll. Can I change the order so that we can let that staff?
Yes, you may. He says he's not waiting for that.
Resolution? No. Are
you not? So just go ahead with your report, Nathan.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll just go down the list then. So we had two resolutions that were pulled off the consent agenda. Okay. First, Resolution E. Resolution supporting the passage of legislation to allow the New York State and local primary election to coincide with the federal primary election. And I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson.
If I may have a moment to talk about this. The original resolution had said that we wanted to have the state primary align with the federal primary date of June 26th. Right, or the fourth Tuesday of whatever the election year might be. And we struck out the fourth Tuesday language and just made it so that it's a resolution about having the state and federal primary election dates be the same. Now, I don't know why exactly the resolution was pulled out off the consent agenda, but one thing that I have since learned about is that this was a very controversial resolution at the committee, the State Committee of Board of Election Commissioners across the state. It was a very controversial resolution that broke down between party lines, and I don't need to go into great detail about that. However, one side very strongly believed in keeping the fourth Tuesday kind of language, and the other side was strongly believed that they should just remove that language and just have both the federal and state primary be the same date. So,
Who did take it off, Dooley?
Yeah, I did, because when I read the first whereas, I was puzzled.
Okay.
So I will read you what I think maybe it should say.
Okay.
Whereas the state and local entities must comply with the Military and Overseas Voting Empowerment Act, thereby not disenfranchising.
Right. I am supportive of that. That's friendly to me.
Is that friendly?
Yep.
And the next whereas.
Is it friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
Martha?
Yes.
Okay.
The next whereas, I think we need to limit ourselves to New York State. So it's whereas there will be reduced costs associated with conducting only one primary election in New York State. We can't really, we shouldn't be talking about other states. On line 11, I object to the word more. Strain on local governments to provide services with less funding.
That's friendly
Any
to me
services.
As well.
Yeah. So I have a problem with the date, but I wanted to make the resolution clearer.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Peter Stein.
I have a question, Nathan. Yes. I may be missing something, but you're telling me that the Board of Elections were fiercely divided over whether to define a certain date by a generality or a specificity. Is that what you're telling me?
That is correct.
Can you explain this?
Not very well. No, I. I did speak to one of our commissioners, and at the end, I was like, "Well, I still don't see the big deal, but there must be something because it was very, very, very controversial." Now there are members of the other political party that were the group that pushed this the most and is what actually passed. I don't know if they can illuminate on the issue, but I cannot, unfortunately.
Huh.
I think this keeps us from wading into whatever issue.
I have Martha, then Kathy.
Okay, I thought I understood this, but so you're saying so the federal primary is set for June 26th, the fourth Tuesday.
Right.
Fourth Tuesday.
Right.
So half of the commissioners or whatever, some part of the commissioners didn't want that to happen, or they wanted it to be called something different?
No. They did not want it to be their position was that they didn't want a specific date. Yes. Because they would actually prefer it to be more, and this is not part of their resolution, I don't think, but they would prefer that it was more in the August time frame.
Yes,
that's the point.
My uninformed guess is that one party is assuming that there's some advantage to be gained by that. And I do know that nationally I've heard that many states are trying to erase the gap in the time frames that regulate which candidates visit which states at which time and tend to give certain primaries primacy or whatever you want to say over others. I'm making all this up, but I'm guessing that there's a possibility that by a certain setting of a certain time, it's hoped that an advantage would be gained in, let's say, scheduling of a national convention or such. Am I making it all up? Of course. Is there a ring of truth to anyone?
This issue came up at the Conference of Counties. Mm-hmm. In several venues, and the one I was at was the Intergovernmental Relations Committee, and they were pushing to have general language. The concern in some counties that actually have village primaries is they're going to have to finance five elections in a year, and that's more than they think is fair. So some of the opposition has to do with not necessarily the date, but the backup period required to get signatures on petitions to appear on the ballots for the various primary elections. And that, I think, is where the controversy is. But the resolution that came out of NYSAC basically said either put it together and have one primary or pay us for the second primary to the state.
Okay. If I may, sorry, Martha.
Yeah, well, that Martha? Sounds like a reasonable compromise. I mean, I think doesn't every state have to have the federal primary on the same day?
Yeah, well, not necessarily. Every state doesn't have to. It just has to be timed so that the ballots can go out to the military people in time and get them back.
Now, remember, prior to it being a June primary, you know, historically New York had been a September primary. Mm-hmm. And so, and those late primaries, and this is me editorializing a little bit, but those late primaries gave a significant advantage to incumbents.
Okay, are we ready to vote on this? With the amendments that were approved, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Go ahead, Nathan.
My next resolution that was pulled off the consent agenda was Resolution F, adoption of list of designated officers and employees required to file an annual financial disclosure form. And I second.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion. Who pulled it off? Carol?
I was just curious as to whether there was any change in the list of those required to do this. Either adding or subtracting people. And then I could have done this with a manifest change, but you legislators, there's only 14 of us now, not 15.
Yeah, I think Covert might be able to speak to that.
Could add to that.
There were some deputy positions added and corrections to titles of positions.
Wait, but nobody taken off?
No one taken off.
That's what I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll support it.
Other questions? Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
All right. My next resolution is the approval of 2014 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair. And I so move.
Can I see a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Those opposed? Unanimous?
All right. Thank you. And then I have Resolution O, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number 8. That's interesting. A of 2014, a local law to enact Section 470 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein.
All right.
Discussion?
Yes. And if I may, I wanted to move the... Julie had some proposed changes, and that's inside of your red packet. And actually, I was comfortable with moving that version.
Peter, are you?
No, I'm not. You're
not comfortable with that.
Comfortable with
that. Okay, then.
I'd rather have you move what came out
of committee.
All right. Okay, that's fine.
Then what we need in that case would be someone to move that as an amendment.
Right.
Julie.
Yes, that I put. Version in your packet so you could see it ahead of time. I hope you will agree that it's clearer, and I think we should be looking at that version to put on our desks before the public hearing.
So you're moving that as a substitute?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second for that motion? Anybody seconding it? Seconded by Martha. Martha, you want to speak to it?
I have a question.
Question? Go ahead.
This maybe does answer a question that I had. So does this exemption, is this exemption meant only to talk about new taxes, new value? Because it says here on what Dooley just wrote, for newly constructed or the renovated portion of buildings.
Well, gosh, I don't know. That with that particular question, I don't know, Joe, if you can help me out on that one. Yeah.
The exemption is for the improvement.
So if I have a house that's worth $100,000 and I do something that's worth $50,000 to get it to LEED standards, the exemption is on the value of $50,000?
I think how that would work.
Yes.
But under the law, the terminology is that the exemption is for the improvement. Now,
okay.
I assume that's how we would calculate it, but it doesn't.
So if we adopted Dooley's language, it would be consistent with that.
Okay. And is the amount to be abated capped at $100,000 or the value of the property capped at $100,000?
The value abated, isn't it?
A value of the abatement means that it's unlimited, essentially, because there's nobody pays $100,000. Taxes on a renovation or even a new building.
Right. Well, when we talked about it in committee, it was about keeping, and those in the committee, you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, but we talked about the value of the property. The value, basically, if a property was valued $5 million, let's say, right, the most benefit that you would be able to get on this is an abatement off the first $100,000.
Of value. So that's not what this says. I don't think.
No, you're right.
Yeah. This is the amount.
It could be clearer.
Well, the amount to be abated is the dollars that
right.
you don't have to pay.
I'm fine with language that would make that clearer. Do you have
Martha, are you moving some kind of amendment?
Oh, I'm just scratching my head. Let me think.
Go back to committee.
Because I think the resolution needs to be changed as well as this, I guess. So.
Well,
the value of the property to be abated.
I thought that this is not under our discretion. I thought that the state only gave us the option to say yes or no and not how to define it. Isn't that right?
We are allowed to give a dollar amount cap on the exemption, but we cannot give any percentages or anything like that.
Okay.
Carol Chuck, on the amendment.
Well, I have the law, the New York State instructions open here, if you can hear me. And they talk about it in terms of the cost of construction of the project. They set a floor of $10,000. It must exceed $10,000, and they word it in terms of cost of construction. And my understanding is that we were adding a cap in addition. That I read it to be the cost of construction of $100,000, but I could be wrong.
Does this need to go back to committee?
So I have it open here if Jonathan
wants I can
to
tell
see
you that the law says that the municipality may establish a maximum exemption amount
right.
in its local law.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That too is somewhat ambiguous. I think Martha's right. It could certainly be made clear that this is the whether we're establishing the amount that the exemption could be,
so
or
can
establishing
we,
that the
so you,
amount of value that the exemption can be for.
So using the language of the law, can we just say that the maximum exemption shall be capped at $100,000 of the value of the property? Does that make sense?
Of property value.
Right. Yeah.
Property value.
Related
can
to
we add
$100,000 of property value?
Yeah.
Similarly, because what my point is, I think the law itself, the state law, is a little ambiguous too.
Right.
Can I suggest we add the minimum too?
What if we say new construction?
Yeah, let's go one at a time. Dave had his hand up.
What if capped at $100,000 of new construction? What if we just put that wording in there instead?
Does that work, or is that friendly?
I think of property value maybe is more accurate.
Jay used the word abatement.
I don't agree with you, Martha, because of property value includes the original value of the property, and it may be an addition to a building or something.
Shall we just move
take it back to our committee.
Yeah.
There you go.
Is there a, would you like to withdraw it and take it back to the committee?
I'd like to withdraw it and take it back to committee.
I don't think it's time sensitive, is it?
No.
All right. Kathy.
Can I just ask a couple of questions that they may have already come up, but I'm aware that there's a time gap sometimes, at least there used to be, between completion of a project and actual certification being received. It's not clear to me when the abatement starts, if it would be retroactive, if it's just LEED standards in the case of gold and platinum, or and only silver is certified, and the others are just LEED standards, and I don't know who would do those, the authority having jurisdiction. But those are the kind of questions that I had that I wondered if y'all are going to take it back to committee, they could just be clarified. I want this. I think it would be great for our community. I'd just like for it to be clear because, let's say, for example, somebody waits, as has sometimes happened, a year and a half for LEED certification. When does the abatement begin? If they want it to start right away and they say it needs to and they make a business case for it, then do we go on a case-by-case basis? Or do we have, anyway, they have to refund it? Do we do a clawback? So,
yeah, so at what point does the abatement begin? Yeah.
And is it subject to actual certification or just meeting LEED standards by, you know, the inspector or whoever does that, the authority having jurisdiction? There's a big difference,
yeah, sure.
And that's under
So, Nathan, I think you've got an idea of the kind of questions that are out there, and hopefully your committee can discuss
that's fine.
Come back again.
Jonathan?
I mean, I could basically answer that question, but perhaps it is unclear. Under the state authorization law, what happens is once the property owner gets its LEED certification, it has to bring it to the assessment office. The assessment office certifies that it meets the qualification, and thereafter the reduction applies. So that's how it works.
So then they can't be assured that they're going to get it until after construction, essentially.
And until after it's approved by the assessor, yes.
All right. Anything else, Nathan?
No, I've withdrawn that resolution.
All right. We're late for our break. Let's take a quickie from Carol and a quickie from Dooley.
Yeah, I just appreciate the chance to get all the questions out on the table before they take it back, since I'm not on that committee. The law does set a minimum, and I just think we might be able to save a lot of work on behalf of our staff if we make clear what the minimum is so that they don't have to deal with every person who's done $8,000 or $5,000 worth of construction. And then the other question I had, the reason that I objected to Dooley's was not that the first set of wording clarifies, but I just have a question that may have to go to hearing before we can get the answer to it, as to whether the LEED standards should be in effect at the time of design of the project versus completion of the construction. LEED standards change, actually, quite frequently. And the time that somebody's pricing out whether they can afford to do a project is the time at which they're going to look at, you know, can I afford to do this and what might be abated might affect their decision to go ahead and do it or not. And I'm not sure of the answer to this question. Maybe there's a reason it has to be at the time of completion, but at least it should be looked at by people who know more than we do, I think.
Okay, the committee will consider that. Dooley, anything else?
Jonathan used the word certified in terms of, which I understood, but in order to get LEED certification by LEED people, you have to pay additional. It adds to the cost of a project. So that's a different certification than I think John was referring to.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's break for 10 minutes. So let's be back in our seats certainly by 8 o'clock. I'd like to call on Carol Chack, the chair of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality.
Mike, I never did my report.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you did. My apologies. And let you get a reprieve,
all right.
Carol.
It's all right.
Nathan, go ahead.
Yes. So in addition to the resolutions that we discussed, we had a couple other resolutions that we're going to continue the discussion on, one that was related to property tax, I guess, abatements, you could say, related to properties that are it's a very complex thing, but related to veterans and renting of properties that are owned by veterans organizations. But anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. So our committee had a presentation from Joe about his goals for this year, this upcoming year, which was very ambitious, but I think very doable. We also used those goals that he had to think about the committee itself and some of the things that we would be able to work on over the next year. And so we have narrowed it down to about four areas. I forgot, actually, that until I saw these goals, just how much the Government Operations Committee is going to be touching this year. The first of our goals, and we haven't finalized this, and so I'm still working on the language, is to focus on the airport. The Air Services Board is reporting to the Government Operations Committee this year, and so really we want to do what we can to help Bob and the Air Services Board get to, I'm sorry, it's not the Air Services Board, but the airport that's reporting to GEO. And we want to get payments back up to 2012 levels. We also have a lot of opportunities from a government operations perspective in the area of intermunicipal cooperation and consolidation of governments. And so Joe is going to be working on a inventory of potential shared service and consolidation opportunities. And Joe, I forgot when we said that you might be able to put something.
I think
together.
That was in May.
May.
The May
okay.
meeting.
Right. And then also the issues surrounding the living wage are also going to be something that the Government Operations Committee is in charge of. And so we have asked Joe that by the end of, I think, March, to put together an inventory of contracts that may require us tapping into the $100,000 contingency fund. So in other words, contracts that are closing or have closed and then will be opened up so that are not opened up, but will be, I'm trying to think of the right language.
Reviewed.
Well, they're not even, no, renegotiating is the wrong language because they're not being renegotiated. It's just that when agreements are open, after they've ended, then we're going to talk about using those funds to get those workers up to a living wage. And then the final thing that we talked about is performance management systems. This is something that had been talked about back in 2008 or so, but hasn't been much work done on developing clear performance management systems. And so that's something that the committee plans on working on this year.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Will?
Yeah, Nate. I thought I understood where you're going on in terms of the $100,000. But it would seem that if a contract has ended and you're at that point you're renegotiating and you can talk about livable wage as a factor, whereas I thought that money was going to be used to supplement what was being paid to workers under existing contracts. Was I mistaken?
No. I believe that the intent of the $100,000 is not renegotiation is a tricky word. That's why I didn't want to use the word renegotiation.
Okay.
So renegotiation could be situations where you open up an
existing. No. Okay. No, but right? new contracts.
Right. So what we're saying is that if there's a new contract,
yes.
Right, or a service has ended. A contract for a service has ended, and now they're opening it up for bids
right,
again.
Right.
That we would then ask them to use to have a living wage for those
right.
employees,
right.
And potentially use those funds to help aid in that. Yeah.
Okay, that's making no sense to me still.
Well, because this is the reason why, Will, because there are many services where you're not, if you open it up for bids, you will not get bids because there's only one place in town or one organization that would be able to provide that contract.
Okay.
So that's where that $100,000 becomes really crucial. Now, obviously, you don't need that $100,000 or you need it, I wouldn't say you wouldn't need it, but you would need it less in a competitive situation where then the two bidders would have a market incentive to find ways to incorporate the living wage into their bid.
Okay.
Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I think, I don't know that we had any kind of written resolution or anything when we passed. It was a kind of a motion in the budget process to add $100,000 and it was designated in some way, but I don't think we had written language anywhere about what was intended. But my understanding was not to renegotiate existing contracts. I mean, it's just my memory. But what you've just said, Nate, that this is as new things come up.
Peter Stein.
Well, to my memory, I mean, what what you're talking about, or what we meant it to be talking about, is maybe to use the word revise, namely when you you have a bid and you talk about with the contractor, well, you know, is there some way that we could afford together to turn this into a living wage or something like that, where you're not changing the rules on them, but you're opening a discussion on how you could come to some mutual agreement. That's what I thought it was about.
Joe?
Sorry.
Yeah, what Nathan talks about doesn't preclude us coming back to the committee at any time to say there's a contract that just came across the desk. It's not in place yet. And it looks like this might lend itself to what we had talked about at the budget time, which is a little bit of a supplement to get it to a living wage. That door will be open all the time. In March, we will come to the committee, and there may be a few of those that we want to talk to. It's basically a deadline on me. Are there some of these that we want to talk about, to have an inventory of those? We would keep the door open on those contracts to make sure it doesn't preclude us from doing anything. Also in March, we will be reporting to the committee for the first time on what we're finding through this data collection effort that we're involved in right now. We're trying to get information on every single contract, service contract that comes through to know, are they paying or not paying? How many employees do they have? How close are they? Those kinds of things. It's a data gathering exercise, too. So for that March meeting, we'll also be reporting on what we're seeing in the data. So I don't know if that helps or confuses things, but again, if a contract came across my desk tomorrow and it looked like I ought to be bringing it back to the legislature for review for funding, I would do that. There's nothing that precludes us from doing that in real time. It's just the committee has set a deadline on saying we want to see what's going on at the latest by the end of or whenever you meet in March.
Brian, then Carol.
I guess I'm just going back to the beginning, and this is simply a goal that committee wants to try to achieve, and they're certainly going to do that through discussion and formulation of policy and stuff like that. And I'm not so sure we need to do it right tonight. just a thought.
Carol?
Yeah, I think that our staff probably can come up with wording. As one of the movers of that motion in the budget, it sure wasn't my intent to go advertising that the county is looking to pay the difference. The whole point for me was that those who want to become the low bidder on our contracts know that they should take into account that we're going to value them paying a livable wage. And yes, there may be some difference, but we don't expect it. I certainly don't expect it to be always that we will come back and be paying the full difference. And I assume you can come up with wording as you bid contracts and discuss renewals to that effect.
Anything else, Nathan? All right. Thank you for your report. Now I'll go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chock, Chair.
Okay. We have an interesting meeting schedule for the upcoming year. We will be meeting on the we will always be meeting on the third Wednesday. I've got the times open here. The third Wednesday of the month. I'll make a recommendation, but there are times that are going to vary for several of our sessions in terms of the time of day. We had an interesting situation where we had people with outside commitments at totally opposing times to each other. So our next meeting is going to be February 19th. It'll be our first full meeting as the new committee. We had a short meeting tonight. But it'll be 10:30 in the morning on February 19th. And then most of our meetings throughout the year will be at 3:30 in the afternoon. But there are two dates for those who are keeping track. They will be March 19th and June 18th. So the third Wednesdays in March and June, we're going to be meeting at 5:30 instead of 3:30 because we really just couldn't make the meeting's time work with the school schedule. And that will come out. Just watch the schedule very carefully. We'll make sure to be announcing it.
We anybody who has not from the committee, certainly, who hasn't already gotten me all of their preferences about filling liaison, both voting and non-voting liaison seats, please continue to talk to me about that. And we had such high interest in two of the 10 voting seats, and I think there's another 10 non-voting seats from both non-committee members and committee members, that I encourage everybody to look at our lists and please continue to be willing to throw your hats in, because there's some very interesting boards and committees that you could get to attend. And I also will ask people to come to the committee, and again, we'll take input from outside of the committee for people to come with their top three goals. We've already outlined some. I had given Mike some for the his introductory speech, and because we don't think that Ed Marks doesn't have enough to do this year, we thought we'd discuss adding some other goals to our work. So that's what I've got. Our next meeting is the 19th at whatever time I said it was, 10:30 in the morning.
Thank you. Questions for Carol? Okay. Charter Review Committee has not met. I am pleased to report that we have some interest in another member of the committee if we can shift our meeting time so that person doesn't have a conflict with another one of our committees. So we'll be looking at that with the members. Peter?
Do we have a meeting time?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. What?
Presently, it's the third Wednesday at 3:30.
3:30.
But we may need to adjust that. Dooley?
Are you willing to say if the person expressing interest would be a Republican?
Dan was the person that expressed an interest.
I'm not a Republican.
I think it would be really good to have a Republican join. That's all.
Well, we're glad to have people interested in the committee. I put out a call, and so far Dan was the one that answered. So, but if a Republican would like to do it, we'd be glad to listen to them, too.
You don't have to change parties, Dan. It's okay.
Can the Republicans still vote no if they would like?
We are all free agents here.
Oh, okay.
The old library committee won't have a meeting until after the REIF proposals come back. Individual member filed resolutions, we have none. Minutes of the previous meeting, January 21st. Someone want to move those?
Move.
Is there a seconded? Moved by Martha. Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Those in favor of the minutes, raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Don't forget, we're going to have an executive session. Oh, Dooley?
I'm opposed.
I'm sorry. One opposed, of course.
I start out the new year by saying why?
Why, certainly.
I continue to be troubled by the fact that the minutes are so skeletal in terms of substance other than actions. I think that we are not doing ourselves a favor by not keeping track in an official way of information and discussion that is relevant to decisions made, the actions made. Having them summarized in notes that have no official standing is less than ideal.
Thank you. Any unfinished business? Could I have a motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation and collective bargaining negotiations? Not to come back and take any action. I have Jim moving it. Is there a second? Seconded by Peter. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Then we'll suspend while they shut down the cameras, et cetera, for about 10 minutes.